Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Hello, Paul.
How are you, sir?
I'm good.
And how many shows have we done today, roughly?
I'm going to say we're coming in on a year, and it's four shows a month, coming up on 50 shows.
Okay. Well, this is the first time, folks, he ever brought me some lunch.
Wow.
50 shows. I've been hitting a big sign on the back of the door, feed the producer. Didn't even see it.
Well, because it's covered by the oversized, extra-large orange T-shirts.
Everything's orange in here.
Everything's orange. I can't see anymore.
Orange County's only community radio station.
Orange Bowl.
That's right.
Okay, well, fine. Now I know. Feed the producer.
Feed the producer. Just brought me a little chili, so I'll be chomping away.
Thank you for introducing the chili into it. I was going to say, I'm good and thankful that, according to my... low glycemic index right now. I'm glad I was able to grab some chili and bring it to the show. So, you guys can't smell this, but Panera has a good...
Plug for Panera Bread.
Yeah, we're going to plug Panera Bread across the street from the station, which a lot of the people that have come and been on the show know that we usually try to meet there for a quick bite of lunch and then jaywalk across Sunflower.
Exactly. Right.
Oops, sorry, wait a minute.
You're giving away our location.
No, we go to the actual crossing. Because we're like, I'm rushing in here 5 minutes before the show, and Paul's like, wow, you're early.
You're early. You got 2 minutes to go.
Anyway, so we're having a little chili here. It's not, we're pretending it's winter in California.
We should have a chili cook-off or something.
Ooh, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, bring little burners in here.
You know, you're so desperate for food. You're going to have me put on an event just so you get some free food.
Anything to bring food here. I sit here all day locked in this studio.
Is this common? I'm going to have Kevin weigh in on this because the two of you guys have common
background.
Well,
first you have to introduce who
Well, is. No. I'm going to just ask, hey, Kevin, so... Is it common that anybody sort of in the industry, entertainment industry, or like, radio and stuff like that, are always like trying to schmooze off free food, basically? Is that common?
Yeah, but you shouldn't bring it into the studio where it can spill over the highly expensive equipment.
That's true.
You need to take them out to some very fancy place and wine and dine them.
I like that even better.
Absolute etiquette in this.
Okay, you can leave now.
I like that even better.
You can leave now.
We're going to get a little closer.
Okay, I will introduce him. So... I have a bias to bringing in people from San Clemente.
You do?
Yeah, I do.
We should name this the San Clemente Hour.
No. I have bigger plans. No.
Okay.
No, but I mean, San Clemente, and I'll tell you why, because you just never know, really, in that town. I think it's the weather, it's the climate, it's just such a beautiful place to live. You just don't know who lives there and has made it home. Kevin, how long have you been in San Clemente?
About 23 years.
23 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So... It's just fascinating who you run into. And it's such a small town that you run into them literally on Avenida Del Mar or around town. We were joking around that, unbeknownst to me, I've been referring to the downtown area the same way that Kevin refers to downtown area, which we tell people, I'll see you on campus, right? And the quad, for those who know San Clemente, is basically Duke's, Ole's, Red Fox. What am I missing? Am I missing one more? I think that's it.
Beach Fire
is down.
That's down on Del Mar.
That's down on Del Mar. So, okay. so when you get too much to drink up at Duke's and Ole's and Red Fox, and you forget where your car is, and you roll down Del Mar, you'll end up at the Beach Fire just for that nightcap at the end of the day before end of the night. So,
and then make sure you call your Lyft driver.
And then call your Lyft driver, which could be Kevin too.
Could be,
right? Or Uber. Are you still doing Uber?
No, just
Lyft. Okay. We'll talk about that because I have a question about the difference between those two. Anyway, so my guest today from San Clemente, California, hear the waves, okay, is Kevin Panizza. And Kevin and I met because he is a professional photographer. And as some people know, I'm a Commercial interior designer, and now I do residential design. I should just say interior designer from here on.
I think we
were at an Orange County Realtors preview today this morning, Kevin and I kept introducing myself as a commercial designer, and these realtors were looking at me going, well, what are you doing here?
Right.
Because all they're doing is houses. So,
besides, to do the full introduction, that they don't make business cards big enough to put all that on there.
All my stuff?
Yeah, so. No,
we were laughing about that. It's like, I'm sorry, can I have the next half an hour to just introduce myself, and then I'll tell you more later. So I met Kevin because we're on this. I mean, I've known of Kevin, but we have a What Do You Think San Clemente page, which anybody from San Clemente that's listening, you should go check it out. We've got 2,600 people on it in a year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really a good, great Q&A. I'll give you a quick story. Yesterday, one of the ladies that used to be a planning commissioner, Nessa Anderson, who also is a realtor down there, Nessa Ortega Anderson, she found a wallet. Somebody had dropped a wallet off, right? And talk about social media working the way social media is supposed to work. She posted on there, which is a closed group, mind you. It's not like my wide open San Clemente.
Right.
She posted on there that she had found a wallet, and it has this person's name on it, and it looks like that maybe they went to high school in San Clemente High in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Honest to God, Paul, within three comments and less than 15 minutes, not only was that person identified, but they were already informed and given contact information.
How cool is that? Yeah. That's the power of this medium. Yeah, we can be instantly connected.
I could touch you across the world as quickly as I can touch you across the room.
Yeah,
which we don't do a lot of touching.
Ooh, you just did.
Ooh, baby. Hello, Paul.
Simmer down, boys. Simmer down.
Okay. Hey,
we
don't have an illustrious background like you do, Kevin. Right? So, we have to live vicariously through the microphone.
That's right.
But anyway, so Kevin is a professional photographer, and I'm going to have him introduce himself. But he recently shot a home remodel that I did up in San Clemente, up on Salvador.
Did he get caught for doing it, or
he shot it? No, actually, the homeowner is a gun owner, and he's a member of the NRN.
Yeah, he outpowered me.
Literally outpowered him. But no, we took photos of that because people have always kind of given me feedback and saying, you know, you should get better photos and better photos. And we live in a world that's very visual anyway, right?
Yes.
So I don't, you know, it's very critical as a medium. I know here we're trying at OC Talk Radio, we're trying to basically infuse video now into this.
Because, maybe people want to see what we're doing.
Right.
Either, for example, there are live mediums like Periscope. We could be streaming it live over that, or there are other live streaming platforms,
so ladies,
or YouTube.
So, ladies and gentlemen, not only would we bore you audio-wise, but now we will bore you visually. So be warned.
I don't know, man. Watching you eat that chili is pretty entertaining.
Yeah, because I'm not eating it. It's just sitting there getting cold. But we shot this house. It came out beautifully. And the gentleman who's the owner, actually, we had on this show as a guest, Bill Baskin, for his company when we were, what was it, Now It Counts?
Oh, yeah.
Magazine,
right. You went
remember?
And did his kitchen, I think.
Yeah, so that was the kitchen. So Kevin shot that for me. And then we shot a commercial project up in Glendale and Burbank. And the reason why I'm talking about this is because you think, yeah, who needs photos? Well, as real as Google, which when you go to the Google Maps now, or used to, you'd go to the maps and you would see satellite. And then you could drop your little yellow guy on the street and see the outside of the building, right?
Right.
Well, about a year or so ago, Google started, maybe a little longer, Google started qualifying photographers to go in and actually shoot the interior, very similar to MLS, where there's set number of shots, set number of panoramics, set number of detail shots, and then basically that goes on there. So when you go search an address on Google, not only do you get a chance to see the outside of the building, but you see the inside of the building. Why is this important? Let's say you're a business. Let's say you're as simple as an office and not even a business that's retail, right? You're going to have clients that you're going to basically maybe try to bring into that office.
Right.
You're going to have employees that you may be trying to, you know, capture some people with high qualifications to come work for you. People are so visually driven. We are so bombarded with visual input all day long that it ends up being something that is a major differentiator. If I go to your address and I look at that and I go to somebody else that I'm also trying to be, you know, I don't know, interviewing with or whatever, the look of their lobby might actually cause me to feel more favorably towards one or the other. Take that and amplify it in terms of your medical practice. Take that and amplify it in terms of your retail location. Heck, restaurant. I don't have to walk in there and find out by sitting there and spending money that your floor looks filthy. Mm-hmm. It is now on the picture.
Or that it's a cool, friendly place, or it's not so cool, or it's right. dark, or whatever. So you know why I believe this? I did it myself. OC Talk Radio, if you go Google OC Talk Radio, next to, I don't know if this comes on every browser or if it's just the Google Chrome browser, but if you Google OC Talk Radio, immediately to the right of our entry
yeah.
are these pictures where we hired a Google photographer to come out, and you can see a 3D, you can actually pan around the room here in 3D. It's a complete virtual tour of our studio. And the other,
which you know, we are—it's such a massive space that we're yeah. in that you know, you, it's good that you can do that.
But I've actually had people who were thinking of coming in here and you know, for whatever, producing right. a show, or some people want to rent the studio right. and just do a podcast or other sorts of productions on our off time, and they came and looked at it and went, "I was able to see really what you're doing." Yep. I thought this would be something different. I thought this was a do-it-yourself thing. No, this is a real professional radio station studio, and they can see that by the virtual tour that we paid somebody to put on Google for.
Which I know, Paul, when you did this, and you've mentioned this before, is that you actually set out to take this very mm-hmm. modest space that you have and actually make it feel, not only perform across the air as a professional production situation, but also feel when you're in it. And I'll tell you, when you sit in this chair and you get in front of the mic and you've got all these sort of props and that environment, it's really easy to not only, you know, seeing it on photos, but being in it, the environment around, and this, you know, you and I are talking our own language, right? We're preaching to the choir, but the environment around you actually helps you getting into that mindset, getting into that role.
Absolutely. We didn't realize how important the environment was, but when you come, if you're just sitting in front of a microphone in the back of a room in a dark warehouse, it doesn't have the same ambiance and feel. And people come alive in this room.
Yeah.
It does look like a little radio station.
Yeah.
It's a very tiny little room in here. But when I worked in real radio, we had all this eclectic crap all over the world. That's the kind of stuff I like anyway. And I started decorating it like this. And I thought, well, maybe this is too much for just the little recording studio. People get a kick out of it. And they brought me other stuff. And we've added, we have neons and other things in here. And that ambiance led people to start saying, I want to take a picture of this. I want to share this on Facebook. This is too cool. Look where I'm at. And then that started us thinking, well, maybe we should videotape this and put it on YouTube and other sorts of things. And suddenly we're creating a viral audience just because of the atmosphere we create. We didn't have to
not
do
even
this.
Listening to a note of sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how powerful visual medium is. And that's why, you know, we try to incorporate that into the design work that we do
right.
in everything, including, well, what's going to be the backdrop of that photo that's going to be on Facebook?
Every other, if you go to most recording studios are just very functional and very bland and very boring because right. they think nobody's going to see it. And we kind of thought the same thing until I started decorating this room and saw the reaction people got. And they come alive. And then they want to share it. And they want to take a picture of it. And they want to talk about it and tell everybody. More than just a microphone on a desk, it becomes an experience.
Okay, I just got, you know, people have listened to the show before know that my wife, basically, whenever she can, she listens to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I totally set it up for 12 to 1 o'clock so that my wife, when she has her lunch break, can listen to the show.
I see. Right? I wonder why we picked that time.
Right. Well, actually, because I've always thought that that's actually a great time, especially as busy as we are with work and all this stuff, to just even when we're eating at our desk like we're eating right mm-hmm. here, we actually can listen to something kind of enjoyable, take us away, change our state, if you will, for that 1 hour.
Well, yep. Plus, happy wife. Happy life.
Happy wife. Yeah. Well, so those who know that my wife listens in, they also know that she basically texts me during the show, right? So I just basically got a text, and it's just funny, babe, so you know I'm sharing it. She goes, wow, babe, I need half an hour to introduce myself, end quote, so much humility today. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the true measure if you're in a happy relationship, okay, is that your wife can send you something like that and you feel all giddy about it and share it on the open air. So, and I'm sitting in a room with I think, two gentlemen that understand exactly what I'm saying. But the importance, going back to the importance of visuals, I mean, you know, I walk into places and I go, okay, you've got recycled wood, you know, you got brick. Yeah, okay. You look like every other person who's trying to basically right. be like a makeshift loft because, you know, you think that's what's going to sell. If there's 15 of those down the street, there's no differentiator.
Exactly.
Okay, what's on your wall? I mean, like, heck, you know, even on a movie studio or a news channel, it doesn't matter what's underneath the table if you're wearing jeans or shorts, but what's above and what I can see is going to set the mood and mode and differentiate between Channel 7 and Channel 11 and Fox and whatever.
I'll go one step further. When I was in the bar and restaurant business, which I did prior to another strange thing I did prior to this, and I had a bunch of Irish bars, and including one in, called Kelly McHugh's in Mission Viejo that was there for about 10 years. And we found that we had to have not only cool visuals when you walk in, which means you feel comfortable when you walk in and you want to stay.
Right.
You don't want to turn around and walk out. We also found that we had to visually, people were like cattle, they had to feel immediately comfortable where to move next. So when they walked in, if they suddenly felt confused, like, well, should I go here? Should I go here? If they weren't sure what to do next subconsciously,
yeah,
they turned and walked out. The best restaurants and bars, in my opinion, are those where you walk in and you just naturally go here, and then you look and say, oh, look over there, and it leads you there. It just naturally takes you through the whole space. It guides you through it. And then the other thing that we found is we had to have one takeaway. We didn't have to have 20 takeaways. Some bars overdo it. They have 50 cool things in there. We had to have one thing that when you went home, you told everybody. It was the giant bar. It was the giant shark table. It was the something that you had that nobody would forget when they walk in. And I think that's critical to somebody. What will people remember when they go home? What will people tell others about your business other than it was great service and whatever?
Right. So you tell a story by that change of state. Like when you go to somebody's house, the outside patio, walking up to the house, walking through the door, those moments of transition are actually critical moments for you to spin a story, to do a theme, to
I'm
guide
welcome,
somebody through.
I like it. I'm going to remember. And that's what you take away. In the same sense that, I don't know that most businesses do this, but if you could have a smell when people went there, like it was a smell of apple pie when you walked in or something. If something that remembers.
Spas do this all the time with jasmine and eucalyptus. Exactly. You smell eucalyptus. What do you think? Gym, right?
Right.
You think sauna. You think steam room.
Yes, right.
Immediately, right?
So you have the. Because that's what you will recall a week later, a year later, a month later, and that's what will come into your head. If I go someplace and I say, let's see, where was I? I went to this dentist's office, I went to this restaurant, I went to the spa. I don't really remember anything about it. But if there was something that stands out, a sight, a sound, a smell, boy, that will just pull you back over and over again.
No, and here's the thing, something that just dawned on me. I mean, I'm going to read a little bit. Kevin was raised in Southern California, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As he puts it, a stone's throw away from the Pacific Ocean. I wonder how many stones he was throwing into the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. Or how stone he was.
That's why
when he was throwing the stones.
Well, he was raised. Okay, we don't know. You know.
Okay,
Ed, how old were you? Were you born and raised?
I was moved here when I was 6 years old.
Where
from landlocked Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow.
Mm. And what did
from
you,
a nice Italian family.
Hey, so what did your dad do that he could afford to live right in the ocean here?
Nothing at first, but he was a very, very successful salesman in the publishing industry, basically the trucking industry.
Mm-hmm.
So through that, I got to see what he did. And he had one of clients that comes to mind that I can remember now that actually sort of kind of got me into photography a little bit was AMT Models. If you remember that company used to build little models.
Oh yeah.
So
cars. I told you guys were going to have fun today.
I remember those.
That company?
Really cool cars and stuff they build. And
they also did trucks like Peterbilts and Freightliner and such. And the publishing company that my father worked for, the magazine, was a trucking magazine. So I would build the models, and I would shoot them. My dad had bought a really nice Canon camera and taught me how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just enjoyed the heck out of building the models and then shooting them, you know. And
you make stories out of it and stuff?
Sometimes.
Dioramas and stuff here?
Yeah. I had a vacant field across from our house, but if there were log carriers and stuff, I would put little logs in there and that kind of thing, and just kind of make it a little working world down there, and I'd shoot it, and sometimes they would use it in the magazine, which was
cooler.
Yeah, it was very neat because it was a great way to be introduced to photography, which was from my father.
Well, you told me that you've been kind of shooting, being interested in photography since the age of what? 10?
Yeah, wow. I was about 10 years old.
We talk about pursuit of your passion, okay? I mean, you're obviously not 10 years old now.
No, it took me a long time.
No, but I think has it always been something that you've had, whether it's a primary focus or not a primary focus? Has it always been something that you enjoyed?
I've always enjoyed it. You know, when I got into junior high school, I actually learned how to develop my own film and then also how to, you know, print my own prints. And they had a dark room. And
those were the days you could really change the photograph in the printing process. Today, I don't know if that's still as doable with digital, or maybe you have more control over it. I don't know. But
Photoshop kits its butt.
isn't one of the most important people in high school is basically the person behind the camera for the yearbook? I mean,
yeah, right.
Well, I like the dark room because sometimes you could sneak girls in there and get a kiss here and there, you know.
Another passion of his, girls.
I only kiss one now. My lovely wife, Wendy.
Hi, Wendy, if you're listening. I don't know if you are, but if you're not now, you'll be listening for the podcast. So hi, Wendy. Say hi to Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
Okay.
Hi, Wendy.
that's Paul. So what took you, I mean, you didn't pursue it as a profession first, right?
No, I was actually simultaneously taking piano and vocals. I was actually groomed to be a musician.
Groomed to be a musician?
That's what I was groomed to be.
That's what your parents wanted? They wanted you to be?
I wanted it, and they supported me 100%.
Yeah. Because I wanted to be a musician. My parents were never keen on that. I was a singer and sang a lot in high school.
If I had said I wanted to be a musician, my parents would still be laughing.
Yeah.
It was I don't know, the greater, the lesser of two evils, because I was surfing at the same time, too. So I don't know.
Anything's
better than
surfing.
My parents were saying, oh, God, he got a surfboard, or oh, God, he got a keyboard. But
did you have a band or anything?
I was in several. Mm-hmm.
Was this like Southern California?
Yes.
Local?
Okay. Yeah, Hollywood. I was would bounce from band to band. I actually got my first record deal in high school.
You got a record deal in high school?
I was signed with Bob Marcucci and Chancellor Records. Worked with Michael Lloyd, if you remember, who also worked with the Osmonds and those kind of guys.
Yeah.
That's kind of the direction they were taking me, and wasn't very interested.
You were going to be a boy band.
No
purple socks for you.
I was more into Harleys and fast cars.
Puppy love. You were going to be puppy love.
Wasn't happening.
So you got a record. How did you? Where did you get a record deal in high school? That's incredible. I dreamed of having a record deal.
Do you
want
to know the God's honest truth?
Yeah.
Okay, so I had been studying for all these years, and a movie came out called The Idolmaker. I don't know if you guys remember that movie.
Yeah.
I remember Ray
title.
Sharkey. It was also had Paul Land and Peter Gallagher, who ended up being on the OC.
Right.
It was the story of Bob Marcucci's life. He was the manager, the guy that made Fabian and Frankie Avalon very famous.
Okay.
And we saw that movie, and my father, being the consummate salesman that he was, contacted Bob Marcucci.
Oh, jeez.
And anyway, long story short, I ended up auditioning, and that's what happened. I ended up working with them. Ended up into doing a lot of session work in Hollywood and L.A., doing a lot of session work for a lot of different bands that I'll leave nameless.
Okay. Any records we'd know?
And, you know, they made you sign non-disclosure.
Do they really? You can't do it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Well, they wanted people to play the album and get it done first, and then the band could go out and learn it later.
Yes.
But
that was the rap against the Monkees and all the stuff.
At $300 an hour, you could see managers sweating dollar signs. So, you know, it was the right thing to do.
Right. Let's get the record out.
Vinyl was forever, so, you know, they wanted to get it out. And I did that for quite many years and ended up bouncing through a few bands and would go on tour with a few bands and ended up in one here, the last one that ended my career. I left when I was 30, but...
any of these you can tell?
We'll leave them nameless.
Okay.
You can Google it.
But these are bands we'd know or heard.
Some of them, yeah. Yeah, not all of them, but some of them. I will give a plug for the last band. It was Flywheel, which was a 80s and 90s hair band. So I owned stock in Aquanet back then.
Hair band.
Yeah, it was very fun. And a great bunch of guys. I'm still very close with
Hanging
all of them.
Hanging out the Rainbow or the Roxy.
We were the faces for sure there for a long, along with a lot of other great bands during that era, like, you know, Motley Crue and Rat and, you know, Warrant, and all these guys were all our constituents. It was a great life, and I was very happy to be a part of it and very happy to do it, and left when I was 30 years old. And
that's why you're still alive.
That's why I'm still alive. I can't say that for all of my friends, but why I'm still alive, and just moved on into other things.
So what made you shift? Like, what made you take... But how long were you in... You were from the age of what?
Well, again,
sounds like 15 to 30.
Yeah. About 30, like, that's a long time.
And the last, you know, I played keyboards for a lot of different musicians and had done that kind of work. But I was also the lead singer in a couple bands, and the last one was lead singer. And then, you know, after 6 years straight, and we actually, you know, sang for our supper. So we were playing, you know, 5-6 nights a week. The band had been originated in the early 70s by two guys from Ohio and had brought it out here, and they were actually doing a top 40 show. And I got introduced to them, and so while that was still happening and as I was playing with that, we were still developing our live show, our original shows, and writing music and all of that. And so that's a lot of wear and tear on the vocal cords, and I could feel that it was starting to take its toll a little bit. And then, you know, again, hair band, rock and roll, Van Halen, David Lee Roth, that kind of stuff.
That was my era, boy.
Yeah, and it was great. You know, grunge started coming down from Seattle, and it was a whole new direction. And so all the pieces just kind of fell into place, and I thought, man, this is the time for me to get out with my dignity and move on to something else.
So what did you decide to do?
I actually ended up in sales myself. I was fortunate through that job to be around a lot of people for a lot of time, and learned that I had a talent for meeting people and persuading them into what product I might be selling at the time, and also making some very good friends through the course of that. I have friends to this day from people that I've met along the way, and it's they're great people.
Was it just any particular kind of sales, Gavin?
Started in music sales, believe it. Of course,
I didn't know
what else to do with myself.
Right,
so,
selling guitars or selling
that sort of thing.
Did you say you walked in and you said, "I need a job" or something?
Yeah, actually, I have to give a plug for a wonderful man, Don Rodriguez of Guitar Center in San Diego, where I was living at the time.
Yeah.
I got off my Harley with no shirt, a leather vest, a pair of jeans and boots, and hair down the middle of my back, and said, he took one look at me and said, "What's your story?" I said, "I need a job." He said, "Okay." And that was it. Started working for them.
And if you go to the guitar centers, I just went to the NAMM show this weekend, the National Association of Music Merchandisers, I think it is, or Merchants, at the big music instrument show where all the music industry goes for the recording artists and equipment stuff. And you see a lot of people who are in their 40s, 50s, 60s, whatnot, who you know they were in a band at some point in time, and then whatever, it didn't work out, or they moved on, and now they're in the business side of the music industry. You see a lot of that in the Guitar Center, not just the retail shops, but the manufacturers and reps. Yeah.
And let me tell you, there are a lot, and that's true, Paul, that's very true.
Yeah.
A lot of really good musicians are employees from Guitar Center, and I'm talking some very world-class musicians,
Exactly.
But, I did that for a while, and then I ended up working in the electronic component level, board level components for about 15, 20 years. And I had been, during that time, I had started my own company called Ocean Image, which is an underwater photography company. And I had been, basically started as a hobby, but
So why underwater?
I love to scuba dive. It was one of my passions, and I had booked a trip to the Cayman Islands, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to buy a little camera and take some pictures, and I ended up doing that. And
that's a beautiful place.
A gorgeous place. And I ended up, that same camera, when I came back to California, I had lost it in Catalina while I was diving. And I was about to buy another one, and my friend came up to me and said, "Before you buy another film camera, consider this." And this is when the digital consumer models were coming out. And I bought the first digital camera, and that was it. I mean, it was just fantastic. So I parlayed that into working with Getty, and a lot of I'm represented by 7 or 8, I can't even remember now.
Getty
stock,
Images, the other
Getty Images, and a lot of stock photography. To date, I've sold over 10,000 images.
Oh, wow.
For web print ads. I've done stories for California Diver. I've got some images in scuba diving and sport diving magazines.
One of the themes of this show seems to be, particularly as people age, to find a way to make money off your passion. Many people can't do that earlier in life. And then as you get older, you're talking about the guy who was the music teacher or the painter.
Yep.
what I call a painting teacher, not a painting
no,
teacher, art teacher.
Rick Delante, another San Clementian, and then Tom Swim, who's also...
Yeah, and as he retired as an art teacher at the high school, and he said, now I'm going to finally go out and be an artist.
In fact, I'll give a plug to Tom. You're talking about that show where we had the two of them, and one had come at it from the education side, mm-hmm. and then became, you know, continued to be a fine artist.
Had to make money, so he became a teacher and did all that, but always wanted to be a real professional artist.
Right, and his love for teaching and his love for giving to kids, and he's actually, like, he talked to a lot of people that are children or people aspiring artists that are in San Clemente or people that are young artists in San Clemente that are actually making a go of it. 90% of the time, the name Rick Delante is going to come up as being sort of a very inspirational, very key.
And then the other gentleman
pivotal,
who had found a way somehow to
Tom Swim,
to make money at this and to sustain himself off of art, which is
amazing. He started out being a commercial artist in New York for ads and Medicine Avenue so forth, and then he decided, I think if Tom, I'm going to get it wrong, I'm going to botch this, but like a 30 or 31 decided, you know what, told his wife, honey, I want to be a fine artist. And basically the guy exhibits...
Give up the daily, the regular paycheck, and I'm going to go be a fine artist.
Yeah, he exhibits it at Sawdust, he exhibits at Laguna,
And his wife was supportive, said, okay, honey, go ahead, let's try
it. And his stuff sells like good buku bucks. In fact, to give another plug to Tom, didn't you tell me you went to the Cabrillo Theater in San Clemente?
Just went on Sunday.
And what was the show?
The Man from Earth, which is a fantastic play. I recommend it highly.
So again, another plug for San Clemente, Cabrillo Playhouse, off Granada?
It's off of...
Cabrillo.
Cabrillo and
Ola Vista.
Ola Vista.
Ola Vista and Cabrillo, so it's down in the historic heart of San Clemente. And Tom is actually in the cast.
Oh. And he was awesome. He was very good.
Yeah, he's in the cast. So, an artistic expression format different from what he does for a living, which is the medium of paint.
So here's your guest today decides, I love scuba diving, so I'm going to find a way to make some money off of my passion here.
Right? And we tell people, you know, if you're fortunate enough to allow yourself to find that early mm-hmm. on, it's something that will sustain you, whether it's sustain your soul, sustain your pocketbook, combination of both, as you age, because it'll just change and manifest itself. And it's like, you know, your perspective, even through the camera lens, changes as you age. There's your experience, your seasoning comes into
play. Well, in a weird way, that's what I'm doing here. I just turned 60, yikes, and I keep saying that over and over again. I'm the aging baby boomer in the bunch here, and I came back to radio. I had been, as a kid, I was fascinated with radio and had recorders, read the morning announcements in high school, went into college radio, ran the station at U of M, did all that, went to law school, and still worked at college radio, which was weird. Like, why aren't I in class? Why am I over at the radio station? And then worked in professional radio. Then that ended and forgot all about it and came to California and got involved in PR and other things. 30 years later go by, and suddenly I'm out of work. My PR agency has fallen apart in the Great Recession, and I'm trying to figure out what to do. And suddenly the idea of radio came back to me in this new form, podcasting. And I thought, well, I used to do that when I was a kid. Yeah, that was fun, and I like that. So here I am back kind of exercising that muscle again 30 years later that I had played with as a kid and thought I was going to do professionally for the rest of my life.
Look, and you love it.
And I do, yeah.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Well,
and
I love
talking
about
it. Let me ask
the storytelling. I love listening. I love talking. Right?
And let me ask both of you guys, because, I mean, it's the same kind of for me. I went down a path of going down sort of business path because I couldn't get into the college that my dad had gone to do engineering, and I basically grew up on job sites.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually loved that. It's actually I not only because the activity and what I tell people the big Tonka, the actual real life size Tonka toys, and you know, for fun, I would basically do compression testing on concrete blocks, you know, to see, ooh,
for fun,
if I push this button, this thing will crash and, you know, to smithereens. You know, it's like, I think maybe I had a little Hulk in me.
Yeah.
I think.
The physics of a sledgehammer.
The physics of a sledgehammer, right? Ooh, I like this. What does it do to drywall, right? So, I went kind of veered off that path, and then I found myself back on job sites, and it is actually something that's very enjoyable. Now, for me, I worked for other companies and stuff like that, but I will tell you, I have never worked as hard for somebody else as I have worked as a self-employed person.
Oh, always. Yeah, that's the truth.
You guys agree with that?
Absolutely.
And you don't realize it if you really like what you're doing.
Well, you know what they say. They say if you do something you love, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah, right.
So
that's exactly
how I feel.
And it comes with stress. I mean, it is work, okay?
Yes.
It's work. So, you know, working hard for something you don't care about is called
hell.
Stress. Hell. Sucks, right?
Sucks.
Working hard at something you love
It's called passion.
Mm. Yes.
So we've got some people who found passion here. Well, let's take a break right here and let that sink into the audience here, and then we'll come back and talk more with the, your artist, rock and roller, fellow San Clementian, right after we get back from this word from our sponsor.
If you are like the majority of Americans, you want to continue living in a familiar environment throughout your maturing years. In fact, according to many surveys, 82% of homeowners overwhelmingly prefer to age in place, which means living in their current homes safely, independently, and comfortably, regardless of age or ability level. With over 30 years of combined experience in residential, commercial, hospitality, and destination resorts fields, Your Home for a Lifetime is a company dedicated to empowering you to maintain your quality of life and independence by helping you make your house your home for a lifetime. Do you want to reorganize or remodel your home? Do you want to add a full bathroom and possibly a bedroom on the main floor? Are you looking to make your kitchen more functional? Is an aging parent moving in, or your child is moving out, or even moving back in? Call Your Home for a Lifetime at 949-492-1872 or check them out on the web at yourhomeforalifetime.com and find out how they can help you make your house your home for a lifetime.
And how to build your career for a lifetime.
Okay, so exactly. And I'm going to just start us off with a quote from Sir Richard Branson.
Mm. Okay, there's somebody who certainly has created lots of exciting things in his life.
Right. And here's the thing.
Including a record label.
Here's the thing. He's had failures just like everybody else has had failures. The thing about it is failure is part of the process. And so if you pursue your passion, when you fail at something, you still enjoyed yourself.
Mm.
Right. And that's something that's, I think, very important. We're so driven by in this society to avoid failure.
But you said it
succeed
there.
All the time.
You have to see it as part of the process and not the end of the process.
No, and it is. It is very much part of the process. You know, it's like, what is it, the old Michael Jordan saying, you know, 98% of the times I failed at scoring or something like that. And it's like, if you don't fail, then not only do you not have a benchmark by which to succeed or from to succeed, but you also don't have an appreciation for when those moments happen.
Somebody told me, I don't know if this is true because I'm not a big baseball fan, but somebody told me that Babe Ruth, of course, for years was the home run king, but he was also the strikeout king.
Yeah, exactly. Right, but people don't remember that, right?
Yeah, right.
So Richard,
so what's your quote?
Richard Branson quote, "There is no greater thing you can do with your life and your work than follow your passion in a way that serves the world and you."
Mm.
That's the other thing that sometimes doesn't get put in the same sentence. I got to be selfish. I got to do it for myself. No, you can do both. Mm-hmm. If you find that point of harmony, if you find that center, okay, life is a totally different experience, all right? And so I'm going to turn it over to you, Kevin, because, okay, I have a diver-to-diver question for you. Do you remember the first place you went scuba diving?
First place I went scuba diving was in Hawaii.
Okay.
I was a youngster.
Okay.
I started snorkeling and diving over there at the age of six-ish.
Yeah.
My family had friends over there, so we would go over there quite a bit, and that's what introduced me to it.
Okay, so the first place I went diving was actually in Catalina Island, and I did find a camera.
Okay. It had your picture
in
it.
Can I have it back?
I don't know where it is, but I thought it was really, it was rusted. It was like there was a camera. I was like, first time off Casino, was it off Casino Point?
That's where
it was. Like
it.
The only place you dive on Catalina. But yeah, I found the camera. I, when you said that, I was like, this is really funny. I wonder if I had kept that camera. It was like, 20 years later. Hey, Kevin, did you lose this? This is your camera. So wow. Tell me. When you started doing the underwater photography and, you know, we're successful, what you're pursuing your fashion now in a different way. Like the last 5 years have been doing a little different focus, right?
Yes, I've been doing real estate images, architectural images for business and for, you know, for residential.
Okay, and the last 5 years have had a whole range of different things. The economy was not in a different spot. We're in a different spot now. Real estate is the biggest benchmark of that immediately, you know, as a litmus test for what's going on with the economy, especially in California. We're so real estate economy based. And what we just talked about at the beginning, you know, like the importance of visuals and stuff like that, right? We were at the Orange County Realtors Association's preview thing today, and you know the word drone photography comes up, right?
Wow.
And how long ago did the word drone even get put into our right? Our language, right? So, tell us more about that experience. How has that been?
The drone specifically?
No, no. Doing the real estate side. Because your clients are people that are either flourishing like crazy or they're struggling because of the economy and all this stuff. So how has that been as a pursuit of a passion but also money?
Well, interestingly enough, I had really not even thought about it. I have a few friends that were surf buddies that actually are real estate agents as well. That needed some interior shot, and so I started, kind of fell into it, mm-hmm. and found it really challenging because it is a different type of photography. It's very challenging. Lighting is very important, and so...
Right, because you're shooting outdoors.
Yes, outdoors with strobes
you're
and
shooting underwater.
Yeah, a totally different medium.
You know, when we were talking about audio and video and importance of all that and stuff like that, we're bombarded by video. Or visuals, right? We're also bombarded by a lot of noise, right? And I tell people to explain to people that do not dive, that there are not a lot of places on this planet where you can completely disassociate or get pretty darn close to it with some inputs, and one of them is noise, okay? So when we were talking about the importance of visuals and, you know, where you don't have the benefit of audio or something like that, sure, you hear the bubbles coming out of your regulator, you hear a little bit of noise, but it's like your visual senses underwater get heightened.
They do.
And natural lights filtering through the water and all this
stuff. And it's still just a sense of wonderment to see another world that you don't live in.
Well, it's like, you know, short of building this or somehow sneaking onto a spaceship somewhere and making it to outer space, this is the closest thing. And it costs you, what, like a regulator, an air tank, or rent some equipment and a light and enough schooling to basically not be a danger to yourself and others underwater.
Right. And, you know, being fortunate enough to live here in California, there's plenty of fantastic places to dive, and there's a lot of really fantastic dive shops with people that can take you and teach you, and I'm a huge supporter of the folks that do that, and also to throw in, I'm a huge supporter of ocean conservation, mm-hmm. So my motto is, as is many of my colleagues, is, you know, take only pictures and leave only bubbles.
Right.
You know, we are it's a great group of people. The photographers, everybody that I've met, are just the nicest folks you'd ever want to meet, willing to help you, share with you. I've got a lot of very famous photographers who have helped me along the way and taught me things, mentored me, so I've been very fortunate that way. And like I said, you know, going into the real estate from that was a huge 180. But I found it uniquely challenging and obviously very different than underwater, mm-hmm. and just really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. Just as, you know, what can I say? I just really, really enjoyed it. And so I've been doing that for about 5 years for a few different people, and I took the leap of faith in end of March, April of this year, and formally introduced Nitsa Photography. And have been building a clientele since, and I do, you know, very high-end photography, but for very good prices. In fact, I'm being told that I've got some of the best prices out there.
And what's the name of the company again?
It's Nitsa Photography.
Spell that for us.
It's Nizza, which is the last five letters of my name.
Wow.
And, in fact, the website is nitsapix.com.
Okay.
You can kind of see a sampling of the work there. And it's just been, I've met some of the nicest people, you know, present company included,
through this
endeavor. And, you know, I just enjoy working with the people. And, you know, as you said, I invested in a drone. Living in San Clemente, we have a lot of beautiful homes that have a lot of beautiful views, and it's a nice way to showcase that.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you'll fly out over the ocean and shoot it back.
So now it's not a peekaboo view of the ocean. Now it's a drone view.
Yeah,
it's a drone view.
And yes, you know, I do them from all different directions, but, you know, typically the idea is to show where the house is in location to the in relation to the ocean,
right?
So that people can say, "Hey, I'm in walking distance," or it's a quarter of a mile.
And
away,
do you use just a little GoPro kind of camera, or do you use something more sophisticated than that?
No, it's the drone that I have actually has the camera.
Oh,
and it's 1080p video,
wow.
So it's high def, and it's very, very cool. And
we'll have to
get you
to fly outside our studio. Can you go up like six stories? Can you fly?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you can come up outside the window here of our office building.
Now, the legal limit is 400 feet, and I need to say that. I am registered,
right.
Okay, so I no longer have to run from the police or...
I didn't know you had to get registered
as of this year,
the beginning of the year.
Yeah, so okay. I am registered, and I can now attempt to talk my way out of.
So we do
it that way, and it's just a lot of fun.
So my guess is for those who are not registered, there will be open season where the gun owners that are
can just shoot you on will
shoot your drones,
and you won't even hear them say pull.
Pull. Yeah, exactly. There's no pull. It's just down. Now you said you had an interesting situation with the drone. That thank God for the GPS technology.
Yes.
Okay.
It's
understandable. Yeah. If you're doing this, I know it because my brother-in-law has one of those, and I'm like, why would you put GPS technology on a drone? Well, because it goes out of range.
Yeah, you can lose them, no doubt about it.
So they fly away from you.
Right,
and you can't control it anymore because you've outflown.
Are you using the monitor? Or how,
yeah, you know, okay. Basically, you know, there's several things to consider. One is your battery life, range. Typically, you know, it depends on the drone, but they can go anywhere from 1,000 feet to up to like 4,000 or whatever. I'm sure more now.
So you got your little joystick, and all of a sudden it flies beyond the range of the joystick. Here,
what happens?
No need for those binoculars in the bedroom anymore. Just fly the drone out the window.
Well, that's the problem. Most people think that's what's going on, and so they want to come at you with the gun or whatnot. Yeah. No, they're very cool. You know, it basically takes a reading of where you take the thing off from, and you know, so you set that, you know, that you calibrate it so that it knows where it took off from, and if it goes out of range, it flies itself back.
It's like Sparky.
Thankfully,
it's like Sparky the family dog. It comes back at the end of the day.
So E.T. doesn't have to phone home. He can just fly home.
He just flies home now. But it's a great feature, and it can be awesome, and it can be detrimental. As I was telling you, Rod, I did have one that kind of lost power. I didn't understand what was going on, and I was trying. So I did not understand why it wanted to bolt away from me, and so I had put my hand to hold the thing down in between the props. I was trying to hold it with one finger in front of a very wonderful real estate agent, and she was terrified. It was nicking my fingers, and it looked like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre all over the street. Every woman was screaming, and I had remembered after the fact, it's got a feature built into where it will jettison itself to 60 feet, find its location, then land, and that's why it was trying to take off from me. So
let me go find myself.
Next time, it's like every drone for itself. You're on your own.
Well, I mean, and again, it's fledgling technology. I mean, we're not the friggin' U.S. Air Force. You know, we don't have this, you know, down pack. So I think it's an awesome new perspective, literally, to do drone photography. In fact, you know, I have a nonprofit in San Clemente called the Spanish Village Foundation. We usually do photo contests every year in February. And somebody submitted a drone photo for the first time last year off the pier and the water. And I thought, wow, that's how cool is that? Like, you know, somebody's actually envisioning from a different point of view. Not even what I can see with my eyes standing on my own 2 feet, but through another medium. And I'll say, relevant to the importance of the photography, I mean, back in the day, it used to be most real estate was, you know, before the internet, was people got the listing, drove by, looked at the house from the outside, curb appeal, and then basically made an appointment to go in, right?
Nowadays, I'll tell you, the stats as of this last year are showing that 80% of people now begin their search for a home online.
And even more specifically, on a smartphone.
Well, that's it. This year has been kind of a big year. When I say this year, I mean 2015.
Right.
It has jumped up to like 67%, if I remember the number correctly. And so that's why it's important to be able to introduce your goods, which is basically what you're doing, you're selling,
right,
to somebody that's going to catch their eye immediately. That's why, you know, I pay very close attention. I'm very detail-oriented before that because I want to make sure that the people, when they're looking, they're going to see what they need to see. I don't know about you guys, but when I buy something online or if I'm interested on something online, I want to see as much as I can about that product before I go.
Well, I'll say this. You know, speaking of curb appeal, you know, a lot of real estate professionals, basically, you know, they kind of warn their client, you know, if the curb appeal isn't there, then, you know, who knows what the inside of the house is. Or maybe the house is immaculate, but the curb appeal is not there. So basically it gets cut off the list, right? So I'm going to flip it a little bit. I'm going to say to all you real estate agents out there that are listening, or anybody who's in that industry where visuals are important, okay, we all live with a friggin' phone on our hand, on our hip, that basically has higher resolution than most cameras we've ever owned, right? But
back away from your iPhone or Android and hire a friggin' photographer.
Yeah.
Okay? I will speak to myself. I have not done that long enough. And then when Kevin came and shot that house for me and the quality of the photos, the reaction, the response, the consistency of the response being positive is phenomenal.
And I'll completely support that because too many people think that video and photography can be done amateurishly now. You have maybe the equipment. You have better cameras than we've ever had, even built into your phone. And it's the same thing with audio, where they're trying to record stuff, their own podcasts. They're trying to shoot stuff for YouTube. They're trying to take their own pictures and not hire a photographer. And the problem with all that is you get lousy sound, lousy images, lousy video, which then undercuts your message that you're the best.
Look, you got to remember, cream rises.
Well,
and so you know you want to make sure that you have other stuff sinks.
Well, yes. and it's quantifiable. Okay, I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's not just a feeling what we're talking about. Okay, Redfin, one of the major listing online listings, they did a study in 2010. Okay, and it basically said that homes that are professionally photographed sell for at least $934 and as much as $18,819 more than homes photographed by an amateur.
Wow.
So that is 61%. Okay?
Well, because you got to learn how to light, you got to learn composition, you got to learn all these other things that
and online those professional photos get I was going to say 61% additional viewing, and it's only getting more that way. You know, before House, before Pinterest, before all of that stuff, people are like, oh, this is a digital photo. How cool. Then, oh, it's a digital photo with 400 DPI minimum. Oh, that's okay. Now I want the whole friggin' screen when I go to your website to basically show a photo. And if you think you can get that done with an iPhone or whatever,
you can't. And you got to remember that my job is to make the real estate agent look better.
Right.
And that's what we do. We help them with their branding.
Which is your life's blood, basically.
Right.
So how do people, for us interior designers.
How do people reach you? We're wrapping it up here. How do people reach you?
You can reach me at www.nizzapix. That's N-I-Z-Z-A-P-I-X.
Nizzapix.
Nizzapix.
That sounds like something everybody should have. Let's get a Nizzapix tonight.
Hey, don't you Nizzapix? Nizzapix? But I will just, again... give a compliment to Kevin. His work has been phenomenal. I've already got him lined up for multiple other projects to shoot for me. Pretty much is in line now. Whenever we do a project, he's going to be part of the process. We're even talking about going in and getting before photos and kind of orchestrating and thinking based on the design we're proposing where the after photos are going to be, so we can do side by sides, because I think people just really need to know that as far as interior design. So I will say this, Kevin, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
He comes with my highest recommendation, and thank you so much for making my work look better.
Thank you.
All right, and how do they reach you, Rod?
I can be reached at Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantous, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, at gmail.com. Or people are always welcome to call me at 949-212-8299. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody or having you guys listen in next week, same time, same bat channel, Wednesdays 12 to 1, The Rad Life.
You have been listening to The Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gantos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.